Welcome to Insight Aviation, helping you to take a look inside the world of captains, aerospace professionals, air traffic controllers, and much more. Learn how they got started, where they are now, and their advice for aspiring aviators. This series is brought to you by Wayman Aviation Academy. Learn to fly with a safe, reliable, professional academy, located between Miami and Fort Lauderdale in sunny South Florida, USA. Enjoy the training and cosmopolitan life with Wayman's 42 aircraft, 6 airline partners, and 2 bases to help you be the captain. All right. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Insight Aviation, brought to you by Wayman Aviation, a huge ab initio academy here in South Florida, helping train pilots from around the world. And I'm very happy to welcome Ms. Gisela E. Banks from Cayman Airways. She's going to be our
guest.
Hello,
everyone.
Hello. And it's wonderful timing because it is Women's International Women's Month. We're on the back end here of Black History Month as well. And Wayman really treasures diversity and making sure that we are an international school with people from all around the world. So very happy to welcome you here. Gisela, I want to take a moment here, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. As you previously mentioned, I'm Gisela Ebanks. I'm from the beautiful Cayman Islands. Actually, it's, you know, the bigger island, Grand Cayman. That's where I am. That's where I'm also based. Mm-hmm. So I've been a 737 first officer for the last 8 years. I've been with the company for 11 years this year. I started flying the Tornado for about 3 years later transitioned. Yeah. Fun flying. Transitioned over to the 737, and that's where I am. So I've currently been flying the 300, which is the older one. The NG, we had that for a bit, and now currently the 737 MAX.
Excellent. Wow, mm-hmm. So Cayman Islands got your MAX back online.
Uh-huh. That's so we're excellent. Excited about that as well, too.
I'm sure. So there's a lot to unpack there. That's really interesting. So where to start? I mean, we really want to start from the beginning. And actually, before we even jump into that, to our audience, those of you that are in the Zoom with us now, we're in a webinar here. So feel free to please do tell us where you're from. Are you from the islands? Are you here in the US? Are you somewhere else in the world? So when we get to our questions and answers, we can kind of direct them towards you. And same thing for anyone watching us on Facebook. Let us know in the comments where you're from and share any questions. We have Guillen, also from the islands, from Curaçao, here on Facebook and on the Zoom, taking your questions and passing them along to us. So let us know where you're from and if you have any questions for Gisela. Now, we always like to know right from the beginning, how did you get interested in aviation? Now, you're growing up in Cayman Islands, how did that bug first bite?
Well, that's a kind of a weird story in itself. Sure. I didn't really want to be a pilot to begin with, but my parents always used to take me to the airport on the weekends to watch airplanes take off and land. Mm-hmm. And it was something like I really enjoyed doing on the weekend, but I didn't have any thought process to it. When I got into high school, I wanted to be a doctor. So I took all the sciences, chemistry, biology, physics. And it wasn't until when we were in a biology class and we were in the middle of doing, I can't remember, it was some kind of like dissecting a frog or something. I had noticed one of the Cayman Airways planes flying overhead because our high school was basically on the approach path for our 737s, basically our airport. So when I watched it fly over, I was like, huh, that looks pretty cool. I could probably try that. And still, it didn't really occur to me that I could have been a pilot. I went to go sign up for an introductory flight. Great. And then that's pretty much when it hit. I was like, okay, the doctor thing's not for me. I'm just going to go ahead and pursue this.
That's exciting. So, you know, it's amazing. Those introductory flights are so important. We just did a high school discovery flight day two weekends ago. Yeah, with Embry-Riddle. Uh-huh. They have a great high school program. And they shout out to Gustavo, who's the South Florida coordinator for Embry-Riddle. He has a great program. And so they reached out to all the local high schools and invited them to come in and do discovery flights. We did about 22 of them, actually, on a Saturday morning. Beautiful day. And, you know, those discovery flight days, it's just all smiles, right? Like, It has that effect. Either you love it and you can't think of anything else, or you hate it.
Or you're like, yeah.
And you're like, okay, I'm going to go do something else, right?
But maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah. It's, you know, because it's a different perspective, right? So clearly your introductory flight was right there over the Cayman Islands, Grand Cayman, your, mm-hmm. your hometown. It's a different perspective to see your hometown from the air when you're so used to, you know, walking or driving around town.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. But your parents must have been into it if they were taking you to the airport to like watch airplanes come and go.
You know what's really weird? My dad didn't like airplanes and my mom didn't like airplanes. My mom's actually fearful of flying. Oh, no. And my dad never wanted to be a pilot at all. So I just find that really weird that they would just all of a sudden just pick up and go, oh, let's take her to the airport. So I'm kind of glad they did.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be here today, but that's a story I probably have to ask my dad about actually, because no one was interested in aviation in my family.
It's interesting. Yeah, you know, so I also find two kinds of students. There's people where like aviation is in the blood. Like my father was a pilot and that's kind of, I was just always exposed to it. And then there's the opposite where like first person branching out in the family, like took a discovery flight or something of the sort and just knew that that's what they wanted to do. So that's interesting. It's interesting. So you get the bug. Did you pursue your pilot license in Grand Cayman or did you come to the U.S. to fly?
Nope. As soon as I got out of high school, I signed up to go to do my training out of San Diego, California. It's awesome still. I mean, it's a different change of scenery at the same time too. And the cost of training was a lot cheaper. Good. So than Florida. Yeah. At the time. Okay. So, picked up, shipped out across, got to the West Coast, did that, got my private pilot license there. And I don't know if you remember that time where I think it was maybe like around 2008 where like the stock market crashed and then airlines were just parking their airplanes because the cost of fuel was skyrocketing and stuff. Mm-hmm. I got caught in that. So initially the cost of getting everything done from private to commercial multi, that was way out of like what I took out for a student loan. So I couldn't afford it. So I ended up just finishing my private pilot there. And I returned back to Grand Cayman and then we had to like immediately start looking for a different flight school that I could finish up out of. So the remainder of it was done at Fort Lauderdale Flight Training International. That's out at FXE, but it's now CTI. And then that's where I finished up everything else and then got back to Cayman, converted the FAA to a CA, and now I'm here.
CA. All right. Very nice. So but there is some flight training in Grand Cayman. I mean, there was somebody give you an introductory flight, that kind of stuff?
Well, at the time, it wasn't flight training, but it was just an instructor who had a small airplane. Jeez. It was a Cessna 152, actually. And he was like, I can take you up for a bit and have you like see if you like this kind of thing. If you hear a rooster in the background, do not be alarmed. There's lots of chickens in my backyard.
Really? Okay.
He took me out and, you know, we just had like a brief little flight and stuff like that, but there's absolutely no flight training schools in Grand Cayman. And then even after that, that airplane has been out of commission now. So if any flying you want to do, you have to go to the USA for that.
Okay. Now we've had a lot of students from the islands here at Wayne Aviation. We actually just welcomed a young lady from Bahamas today
for our
March class. Yeah, absolutely. We've had great students from Jamaica, Bahamas, just about every island, Curacao, Guyans from Curacao, and tons of our students from Curacao, Barbados, we've had great instructors. I would like to know the islands myself. I need to fly around a little bit more and get to know the islands better. But, you know, it's kind of a common thing I hear is that there may be a small flight school, there may be an instructor with an airplane. It's enough to kind of get your feet wet and know if you like it. But most students do come to the U.S. to learn to fly. Right. And so one of the reasons we welcome, of course, is because Miami, where we're located, is the Caribbean's backyard. Right.
Yeah. It's so close to everything.
Super close. Yeah. And of course, we're authorized for M1 visas, which international students need. So we've been very lucky to have wonderful students from the islands. So you get your training done here in South Florida. Fort Lauderdale is a great airport, really busy airport actually to train out. Mm-hmm. You get a mix of executive aviation, a lot of business jets coming in and out. And then there's at least a handful of flight schools that I can think of, right? So pretty busy little airport. Did you immediately you converted your license? Did you immediately like go and apply for Cayman or was there like a pit stop where you had to put in your time and fly somewhere?
Well, I actually kind of lucked out yet again. When I was just about to finish my commercial multi, a friend of mine who was already flying for Cayman Airways Express on the Twin Otter, he gave me a call and he was like, send your resume in because they're looking for pilots. So by time I finished, I sent my resume in, and then like I got back to Cayman like on a Wednesday basically, and I had the interview like the following Monday. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, okay, we want to hire you. And I pretty much started training for that like about a week after. So it wasn't much of a downtime for me when I finished flight training.
The timing was right, you know, and
perfect timing.
And you were probably coming out of that 2008 dump, right? Where like everything mm-hmm. just kind of went down and then mm-hmm. really started picking up probably around 2010, 11, going to 12 yeah. is when we started hearing a lot more about pilot shortage. And those alarms were blaring until just last year, right? When we came into our pandemic cycle. Yeah. But aviation is very cyclical. It goes up and down. And it really is kind of about your timing, right? It's about being prepared when the timing is right. Right? So your timing was excellent.
It was perfect. Spot on. Yeah.
So the Twin Otter, almost all 135, small 121 flying in the Caribbean is in twins, right? So how far did you go on those otters?
So we fly to Cayman Brac, which is a sister island, because the Cayman Islands is made up of three islands. So you have Cayman Brac, Little Cayman, and then the largest of the mainland is Grand Cayman. So we would fly from Grand Cayman to Cayman Brac, also from Cayman Brac to Little Cayman. Mm-hmm. So Little Cayman is an uncontrolled strip. So, and it was just basically us just flying in there. So that was good fun all the time. It was mostly tourists. A lot of divers would get out there and stuff like that. So, yeah. So we were fairly busy, right? On like that 2010, 2011, 2012 kind of thing. We had a lot of tourists coming in and it was like, bam, bam, bam. Like nine legs a day. Sometimes get the occasional 13.
Wow. Long days.
We had to, yeah. So we would also do like cargo flights as well too, because those other islands, of course, they need to get their food. So we would kind of like get the cargo, bring it in for them. And we also served as a medevac as well. So if there were persons that needed transport to the mainland to get hospital treatment, we would also do that as well too. So we were pretty active.
Yeah. You got to put in your dues. How long were you with them for?
For 3 years.
3 years, right? Mm-hmm. And by the time you were applying for Cayman Airways, you must have been up around 1,000 hours thereabouts?
I actually got started on the 737 with 2,800, close to 2,800 hours. So that was a lot of fun. And it's like the flight time. Yeah, it's a ton of fun. Flight time from Grand Cayman to Cayman Brac is about 40 minutes. And then from Little Cayman to Cayman Brac is about 7. So it's just the multiple sectors every day that just add out.
7 minutes, that's up and down. Like your wheels up, your wheels down. You're like a skipping stone jumping between the
three. I know, right?
But, you know, so many people think that you go to flight school and then like you're immediately working for American Airlines or LATAM or something like that. And there's this period, I kind of think of it like a medical residency, right? Where you finish your schooling and then you've got to put in your dues for, you know, 2-3 years, build your flight time up to get those ATP hours, you know? And it kind of depends on the country. It depends on your timing. You know, we've had students go right into the right seat of an A320 out of flight school. And then we've got students that, you know, you really do have to build up your 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 hours to get in the door and to be really considered seriously. So how was that transition from the Twin Otter into the 737?
Initially, it was a handful because you're going from something that didn't have an autopilot and you're basically your own flight attendant as well too, because it was a 17-seater. Mm-hmm. So we would be the ones that would go clean the cabin. We're the ones who do the head count, the passenger briefings, everything like that. And then you get over to here and it's like, oh, well, I have coworkers now. I have flight attendants that you have to kind of keep in the loop. You have to be more situational, where more CRM. So that itself was a little bit of like, oh my God, I'm not used to this. And then getting used to the airplane as well too, because the Twin Otter was, at the time we thought it was like the fastest machine out there. But then when you get into like the right seat of a 737-300, it's like things are just going like twice the speed of what they normally would. So it took a while to like get comfortable and grasp the concept of the autopilot and watching stuff and understanding the speed, setting up and being configured so you're not having an unstable approach, that kind of thing. Mm. So that was always good fun.
So, I mean, how do you, because it's always been described as like a fire hose, right? Like you've got to kind of just absorb all this information quickly.
It is 100% that.
Did you have like study buddies, or were you like always a good studier, a good student, or did you really have to kind of dig into it?
Well, for me, when I got hired, I got hired with my husband as well, too, who's also a 737 FO. We actually upgraded the same time. So we actually helped each other out when it came to, you know, call outs and flows and procedures. We did sim together as well, too. So I would sit in the left seat and then he did his right stuff. And then we'd swap as well, too. So I'm thankful for that, that I actually had someone to help me, and I helped him as well, too, going through stuff. But it does definitely help, though, in those situations where you're transitioning from a light twin or just from flight school into an A320 or whatever, to have a good, solid study foundation and, if possible, a good study buddy as well, too, because it does help in the long run.
Absolutely. We hit on that a lot. I was talking about it in orientation this morning. You know, everyone wants to fly, but for every hour of flying, I think our rule of thumb is 3 to 4 hours of studying. You got to hit the books to get the most out of your flight time. So if you've been now with Cayman for 11 years, you said?
11 years this year.
All right. So if you can go back and talk to yourself, 11, 12 years ago, any advice for that upcoming Giselle?
Don't be so hard on yourself, sweet Gisella. Don't do that. When I was in flight school, I had the hardest time with instrument. Like, that's where I thought I was just going to give up. We got to that whole area with holes, and dude, I had the hardest time. I could not understand. Yeah. I was like, how are you guys seeing these left turns and these right turns? Like, how do you do it? And like, at that point in time, I just like, I called my mom and I was like, I'm going to give up. I can't do this. I'm going to fail. I'm going to eat up the cost of training. We're going to have to take out another loan. I'm going to have to change flight instructors, all that stuff. And I panicked, like I legit panicked for like weeks on not being able to get this. And it wasn't until like I went to bed, I took a week off from flight training, and I just kind of decompressed, took the stress off. Like, now I understand the importance of meditating, but at the time I didn't know that's what it was. But I kind of just did something completely different. And I was like, I'm not going to look at the books. I'm just going to just do something, go for a run, go for a walk, that kind of thing. And like, maybe the following week I picked up the book again and I was like, that makes sense. Direct entry, parallel entry. I get it now. So I would say like, just not sweat and just not sweat the little things, the things that seem that is like a really huge stumbling block. Just keep at it and stay focused and just try not to stress. Everything is going to work out. And if I wish that someone could have told me that, because it could have saved a lot of heartache, a lot of tears, a lot of crying, and eating Oreos and ice cream.
You gotta find your comforts too. Things you can turn to, like those Oreos. That ice cream.
Exactly.
Maybe it's a run. Maybe it's meditating. Maybe you figure that out. Yeah, but it's important to kind of just step away from stuff. Absolutely. I've always heard that it's true. Like, your best ideas are like when you're working on something, you just can't figure it out. Take a shower. You know, your ideas come in the shower. Go for a walk. Any of those.
Just walk away for it for a bit, yeah.
Yeah, you'd be surprised kind of it comes to you in those moments of clarity. Great, so it sounds like, and how long did it take you to go through your training? It was two parts, it was private, and then you completed it here in Florida. Was that like a year, 2 years?
So everything combined worked out to be a little over a year. And that's because we had to pick up and then leave San Diego to go do the whole visa process again and then get into another school. But just a little bit over a year.
That's not bad at all. You were really hitting it. Our full-time program is also a year. But you know, it also depends on how much effort the student puts in. You know, I've had students do it as quickly as 6 months, which is very rare. And students that's kind of stretch it out, right? But everyone kind of has their priorities, their abilities. Yeah. So we go through all this training. You're now at Cayman Airways. Tell us a little bit about the airline. You've been there for 11 years, so you must know it pretty well. It's like, what are the routes like? How far do you go? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, before COVID, we had services to Chicago. We did Dallas for a bit. Panama, we did that for a bit as well, too, because we're a government-owned airline. So it's basically like, okay, if the Department of Tourism wants us to fly to that specific location, we would.
Okay.
We were also doing New York, Tampa, Jamaica, Montego Bay and Kingston, Honduras, So we had a good little market going on. I mean, it was just mostly, Denver as well too, if I didn't say it. And then COVID hit. So now everything's pretty much just come to a standstill. Now you're going from flying like close to 80 hours a month to maybe 20 something hours right now. But we're currently still doing flights to Miami only and Jamaica and Honduras.
Miami, Jamaica, Honduras. Well, sure. Just like anything, the market really kind of shrunk dramatically there. Mm-hmm. And unlike the U.S., so we had a nice conversation through the Greater Miami Aviation Association with Delta and American Airlines not that long ago. They're telling us that domestic travel is up to about 60-70% at this point. But when you're
good.
Yeah, it's great. International is still very, very low, though. But when you're a small country where almost everything is international flying, right? Well, actually, I'd say just about everything. If you're not in the Otters, it's international flying. And you were telling me just before that Cayman is actually COVID-free right now. And that's really impressive. I'm surprised we haven't heard more about that. You know, everyone talks about New Zealand.
I know.
Cayman's right here.
Those are the things that need to be publicized. Yeah, we had our last community transmission in July of last year, either July or August. I think it was July.
Right.
And we went at it hard. Like we did the curfew stuff. We did the masks. Because we're such a small island as well, too. It's really easy to keep track of the population. It's only like 65,000 of us. Okay. So we went really hard with that, the social distancing, and we also closed our borders. So that's why a majority of our flying has also went from like super 80 hours a month to now like 20. So that's one of the things. And then we also have a strict quarantine measure in place that if you do go and you come back to the Cayman Islands, you have to quarantine for 14 days, either at a government facility or your house. Mm-hmm. And they do keep track of you. And that's kind of like how that enabled us to get to where we're at right now. But of course, we're also hurting big time because there's a lot of people who depend on tourism and tourists from the United States, namely. Yeah. That come here for vacation and they can't do that now because obviously COVID. So,
well, that's how I know the Cayman Islands. I was lucky to make a visit there in Grand Cayman on a cruise and, you know, swim out to that like stingray area where there's just like tons of stingrays around.
Oh, Stingray City.
Yeah. Stingray City. Yeah. It was beautiful. I love Cayman. It was just, you know, a beautiful Caribbean paradise. But it's got to be particularly tough as a pilot because you're coming in and out of the country. So there's, I imagine, some special, some processes that pilots have to do since you're one of the select ones that are coming in and out.
Well, for us, it's 10 times more strict on us. But now when we do fly to the United States or Jamaica or basically anywhere internationally, we don't get off the airplane. So before we used to be able to get off, clear immigration and customs, and you'd get off, do the walk around and come back. Mm-hmm. Now, because of COVID, we just stay on the airplane. Obviously, we do get off just to do the walk around outside the perimeter of the airplane, but we don't go on the jet. Mm-hmm. We also do frequent COVID testing as well, too. So where someone might get tested for COVID only when they feel like they have symptoms, we have the luxury of getting tested once a month. And also, it would increase more if your flights pick up as well, too. So if you've been exposed more than what you normally would be, of course, we have to pick that up as well, too.
Sure.
Our flight attendants are always fitted with PPE. Mm. So they have the whole setup, the face shield, everything like that. Ooh. So that's the small price we have to pay. So it's like the max is back. We're all excited about
it.
Yeah,
that is exciting. It's
like limited flying as well, too. So
it's what we're dealing with right now. And I certainly hope we'll be able to kind of carve our way out of this in the next couple of months before summer. Mm-hmm. At least that's what the news is, right?
That's what it seems like so far. So
when were you able to bring your MAX back online? That was a huge news story that kind of passed us. I didn't know Cayman had the MAXs.
Oh, you didn't? We got our first MAX in 2018.
Okay.
We flew that for a bit and then we got the second one in February of 2019. And it was myself and the manager of training who went up to Seattle and we flew it down from straight from the factory to Cayman.
Beautiful.
And then, that was a wonderful experience as well, too, getting to do a test flight and doing the custom mix and stuff and seeing what it takes to take delivery of a brand new airplane in and bring it back to Cayman. So that was pretty cool. Unfortunately, we did have those accidents that kind of coincided with the grounding. So that was short-lived. We just managed to get it back up with respects to the whole aerospace, because some airspace is actually blocked and banned the MAX as well too. So Jamaica just lifted theirs the other day. And then United States, obviously. And that's where we do most of our flying in that area. So we bought it back on February the 19th. That's when it did its first revenue flight. We flew to Miami. It actually flew today as well too. So if anybody ever feels like they want to go, have a look. It's Wednesdays and Saturdays it flies into Miami. So
nice.
Good fun for the spotters.
Yeah. Now, you know, people always kind of joke about like the new house smell. You're like, well, you have something new, but like new airplane is like a whole nother thing.
It has a wonderful smell.
Yeah, it is a beautiful thing. I got to fly a pretty much new Cessna 206 the other day. Beautiful G1000 panels and autopilot and air conditioning.
Ooh, I was like, fancy. Air conditioning in
the Cessna, that's something.
But, fancy.
Yeah. It's not a 737 though, but it was fun.
but it's brand new.
Yeah. Little hop, it's always nice. But how is the MAX training? I imagine now, because there's been some retraining as well, right, to get everyone used to the computer systems that they basically control the aircraft, right, the aerodynamics of it. Was that, you know, just like an update to your original 737 type rating, or was it more specific?
Well, I haven't physically gone to the Miami sim now to go do the whole return to service stuff since the MAX has been recertified to fly. Okay. But because it's half of us that have been flying to 300, the classics, which is me. And then the other half actually went up to Miami and they got that stuff done in November, just when everything was starting to, you know, open up with the MAX and whatnot. Sure. But from what I'm told, it's basically an add-on to what was already been taught with the MAX, and also how to recognize certain scenarios that should they come up, which they shouldn't, but just in the odd event that they do, you know how to go ahead and disconnect stuff and get access to your stab trim cutout switches, and just basically familiarizing yourself with your FMA enunciations as well, too, because they have the angle of attack sensor as well too, that will show you like angle of attack sensor fault, or your airspeed indicator will tell you airspeed fault. So those kind of lights, and you just kind of have to understand what they mean and when they happen in tandem, that you're not like taken back from it and you're like, oh, what's this?
Absolutely.
So I think it's like a 2-hour sim session. So I do that in April. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Oh, so you're going to be in the Miami area pretty soon. Nice.
Yep. I'm up there for like 2 weeks in April. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I definitely hope you'll visit us, you know, take Gian up on that and maybe.
I shall.
Maybe even take it back up in a Cessna. How long has it been since you've been in a small plane?
Let's see. It's been a while.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We get a lot of airline pilots that want to, and they have to kind of relearn how to fly by hand in a small aircraft like that. It's funny kind of to watch a little bit. But, you know, they get it after a while. It comes back. It's muscle memory. Yeah. So it is International Women's Month, and I imagine Cayman Airlines being a small operator, are there other female pilots flying with you at Cayman Airways?
Yeah, we hired two additional females on the Twin Otter. One started in 2016, if I remember correctly, and another in 2018. So that's good moves.
That's great.
You know, yeah, exactly. We're coming a long way from when we first started in 2010 and it was just me. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, trailblazing.
Proud of them.
Yeah, making the way.
Proud of them.
It's a huge thing, you know. We have Katie, who I don't know if she's with us on the call here, but she's very involved with our local 99s chapter. She's our director of purchasing and runs our pilot shop here. And her, along with Rosa, who's my sister, our director of operations here at Wayman Aviation, have always been big on pushing women into aviation. So hosting the 99s, bringing them up, and so we're really happy to say that, you know, I think right now it's somewhere along the lines of 7% of airline pilots are female, and our student population hovers around 15 to 20% female. It's really nice.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, it is really good.
Yeah.
And they tend to be our best pilots, right? I don't know. I think it's because they have to outshine the guys, or maybe they're just better studiers. I don't know. No offense, guys, but they tend to be.
It's probably a mixture of both.
Yeah, probably a little bit of both. And, and they formed a great network. They've actually created our first student group. It's called the Wayman Angels. They created it themselves, and it's basically just a women's support group, kind of like almost like a mini offshoot of what the 99s are. And mm-hmm. So coming up, you know, being the first pilot in your family, first woman to be flying at Cayman Airways, did you have role models that you looked up to that you're aware of in the aviation world?
No. Not one clue. I went in solely blind. I just thought this was something cool. This is something I want to do. And I just went, I just did it. And like looking back as well too, I kind of wish I had someone as a mentor to sit down and like discuss how I was feeling and, you know, and I wish I had someone to prepare me for, you know, what I would be walking into when I got on the Twin Otter, because even though it was like, yeah, I got a job, I still had to deal with the negativity that most passengers would express when they boarded the airplane. If you ever get a chance, have a look at the Twin Otter. The flight deck is open, so it's not closed. Oh. So when passengers would come on, I could hear them making comments on, oh, this is female in here, we're going to die or we're going to crash or that kind of thing. So that was always something that kind of messed with me negatively for a bit. And I do wish I had someone as a mentor to, you know, talk to them about it and gain confidence from it. But I overcome it.
You did that. You know, I never think about that, because usually you think about the other pilots, right? It is kind of a male dominated. So you kind of think of it coming from other pilots, but it hadn't occurred to me from the passengers themselves. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And then we have to put you in touch with Maria Zedi. She actually just retired. She was one of the first pilots for Air Jamaica. And
oh, yes, I heard about her.
She's wonderful. And we had the opportunity to interview her about a month or two ago. But she's been a friend of Wayman and very active in the 99s for a long time. But she's excellent. She actually finished her career, just retired, as a 747 captain for Atlas. You know,
mess with her.
Yeah, flying the queen all over the world, right? Anchorage in Japan and Australia and all that. Very interesting. Have you ever reached out to these organizations like Women in Aviation or the 99s, any of those?
I joined Women in Aviation. The only thing about it is that the distance, at least that's what I find, I can't make it to most meetings as well too, because with my schedule and the distance that where I would live in Grand Cayman to catch a flight to go up to a meeting or whatever. So I would try to do like their little annual conferences that they did every year.
Sure.
But that's really about it. But I didn't even realize that there was so much stuff that was available to female aviators out there in the industry, like the 99s, like what you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I've seen several Facebook groups as well too that cater towards female pilots as well too. So a lot has changed since obviously when I first started flight training to now. Like I've noticed there's more of a support group. So that's pretty cool. That's a good accomplishment and good move forward as well too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's maybe one of the nice side effects of this new Zoom world that we find ourselves literally in right now. Is that it's easier to join a meeting, you know, to log into someone who's talking about this or watch a presentation from somebody like yourself. I mean, we might have a young female aviator watching right now on Facebook or here on YouTube later and thinking, yeah, all right, we can do that. And it's pretty exciting. It's an interesting time, just all around, lots of things changing and morphing. The 99s have been a great organization. We actually hosted their 90th anniversary in this hangar that's behind me.
Oh.
Yeah, they had a nice big party there because the South Florida chapter is particularly active. And a lot of the pilots throughout the Caribbean, you know, participated in that one, the Treasure Coast 99s. Shout out to the Treasure Coast 99s and all of them out there. So I think what would be best is I do see some questions coming in from our Facebook side. And for anyone that's on the call right now, if you have questions for Ms. Gisela, go ahead and put them in there. I'm kind of curious. So Guillen kind of got to know you through your social media presence, you know, at Flaps 40. Was there a concerted effort, like a thought, like, oh, I'm going to make this big? Or was it just like you're having fun putting photos online? People start following?
No, to be honest, I actually started out with it as Flight Lady Gizzy. But I'm just going to give a short little story with that. I started out as Fly Lady Gizzy. It wasn't intended to be something really big. I was just something like, I was just throwing pictures on it. Like, here, look what I'm doing. This is super cool.
Yeah,
it actually managed to pick up some speed. Then it picked up some speed from the wrong people. And then all of a sudden I noticed that someone started using my pictures on another Twitter account. So I was like, you know what? And I never did watermark my selfies and stuff. So I'm like, all right, let's just stop that and start all over basically with a new name. But at the time, it was, the intent was never to be something big. I just wanted to like journal and just let people see what it is that I do. Island flying from a different perspective. Cause I know we've seen tons of pilot accounts with people that are probably working for American or maybe for Delta, but you've probably not seen so much of a smaller airline in the Caribbean that's, you know, dealing with day-to-day flying and stuff. So I thought, okay, that should be something pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it's a great place to be. And the islands and flying kind of go hand in hand, right? Like I imagine like way back in the day, the only way to get around was boats, you know, island to island. And now it's definitely island hopping. I can't tell you how many 402s and caravan and things fly out of South Florida to all the islands every day. We had Tropic Ocean Airways, Rob Cervallo, he flies the caravans on floats, and they just opened up a base in Puerto Rico and they're doing all the islands as well. So yeah, that's a great one. Rob's got a wonderful story as well. But let's see what kind of questions we've got going on here.
Let them rip. Let's go.
Sure. This is pretty generic though. Come on, guys, give me better questions here. We want to know, you know, if you're aware of any scholarships for international students. It's very difficult for international students to find the funding for flying. Was it kind of your family coming to support you? Were you able to find any sponsorships?
Well, on island as is right now, there are basically zero scholarship opportunities to pursue aviation. I ended up getting a bank loan, and that's what I'm in the process of paying back right now.
Sure.
So that's another option as well too, if you wanted to look into that. I know of some other aviators as well too who managed to get a student loan from the bank to finance their training, but there's at the moment I'm not aware of any international scholarships to study in the US for that.
It's very tough, and I've brought this up to a few people that do scholarships, that do banking, but internationally it's very difficult. The vast majority of scholarships that we see are instrument above, because they want to know that you can put in the effort to have your private pilot. And they do instrument and above. The 99s do scholarships, but I don't know if they're available to international. The only one that I'm aware of is IATA, which is the International Airline Transport Association. And they put out the scholarships every year. So for—
Oh, they do?
Yeah. But I mean—
I didn't know that.
One or two scholarships, but nobody knows about it. That's the thing. You know, if you're a US citizen or resident, there's a good amount of scholarships. There's a Greater Miami Aviation Association. Our Miami-Dade College students have access to educational loans and things like that. But internationally, this IATA one is the only one that I'm aware of. And that's because they are an international aviation association. So that makes sense. All right. Andy wants to know what was the hardest time you had as a pilot, right? Maybe it was studying, or maybe it was like the pressure of the schedule. Have you had any particularly hard times as a pilot, and how did you deal with them?
Let's see. I think the hardest time really for me was like the time I mentioned with just starting on Express and on the Twin Otter, and just kind of like having to deal with the negative comments, or just having to deal with passengers, you know, passing snarky remarks. I don't know if it's something in the States, but I know like it's really predominant here, like in the Caribbean region. People have a tendency to be nasty. They're like really insultive.
Wow.
And if it's something that's out of the norm, like having a female in the flight deck, that was totally out of the norm. I was getting a little bit of, you know, nasty remarks and, oh, she's flying us and stuff like that. So like I said, initially it did affect me negatively. Like I would just, sometimes I was like, you know what? I don't really care. I'm probably going to quit and all that kind of stuff. But I ultimately ended up just saying to myself, well, okay, maybe I need to set goals for myself. So if, for example, if I landed the airplane a little hard today or whatever, I would set a goal for me and say, okay, well, no more than VREF plus 10 or no more than VREF plus 5, that kind of thing. And I would go towards that goal and make sure that those flights were ultimately super smooth. The landing was great. I worked on even passenger communication. I took a small little course on how to be able to be more presentable to a person and how to speak to a person affluently and let them know what's going on and all that good stuff. So I used it to push myself instead of just, you know, sitting and sloping. So that's something that I can say I'm proud of right there. I did push myself to get away from the stereotype of, okay, well, she's not a great pilot or that kind of thing.
That's interesting. So take the haters and make it into fuel, right? Make yourself better because of it. I like that. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, now people, especially now on the internet, now that you've kind of exposed yourself as a public figure, people can be nasty online as well, right?
Yeah, extremely.
Absolutely. And one thing that I've been having this conversation quite a bit, actually, is about students and budding aviators kind of going back and kind of curating their social media, right? Because aviation pilots have a professional appearance, and that extends to your social media, right? Have you ever gotten in trouble for having such a strong social media presence or had to kind of clean things up?
Nope. I've always been extremely cautious on what I've posted as well, too. At the same time, I was thinking if I had to leave Cayman Airways at any point in time and my future employer wanted to have a look at my Instagram page or Facebook page, I want it to be a strict reflection of who I am as a person doing this particular job. So I wouldn't be the type of person to snap a selfie during flight or, you know, make some really rude remarks about certain things or whatever. I was extremely cautious and still am extremely cautious of when I take pictures as well, too, because there's that whole issue where you can't take pictures during flight, who's flying the airplane, if you're paying attention to the camera. So I've always tried to keep that in mind as well, too. Keep it PG.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big thing, right? Especially because we're taking young people, and now everyone's got a social media account, right, from young age. But I find people are getting a lot smarter to it. I'm not seeing as many issues with it. And it's kind of part of our coaching, you know, just like writing a resume now is going back and taking your social media. Because companies that are hiring do go back and take a look.
Right? Mm-hmm. They do.
Absolutely. So in Cayman Airways, are you purely a pilot? It sounds like because you picked up an airplane, like you might be branching into other parts of the business.
Well, it kind of looks that way. I kind of want to think that actually. but for right now, I'm just a first officer still. But I guess with these experiences, at some point I could probably take it and say, well, maybe chief pilot sometime or maybe manager of training or whatever. Yeah. So
yeah.
We'll keep that in the bag. But for now, I'm just a co-pilot.
Yeah. No, that's important. I think, you know, people think you get to this place, like you are now a 737 pilot, but you're young and you've got a whole career ahead of you, right? Like you got to keep growing, bettering yourself, whether that's new types and trainings or responsibilities. What often makes a huge difference is putting yourself out there, right? Being the person that volunteers and says, yeah, I'll take that trip. I'll go with you to do this or that.
Yeah, whatever. That's something I've been doing as well too, because I just want the exposure as well, you know? And is you're doing something else that's different from just the regular line flying stuff. So,
yeah, absolutely. Do you ever, in normal times, did you ever go out and do like career fairs or anything like that?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
That's a big one. There's something great about kind of touching kids at like a middle school, high school, and kind of getting that bug of aviation there.
And being able to inspire them as well, too. That's really great.
It's gonna be great, you know, seeing you there with stripes in the hat and people connect with that. I've done so many career fairs right here around the corner, you know, in parts of Miami that are not very well off. And people don't realize that there's an airport in their backyard, or the number one employer in all of South Florida. Miami is aviation, and Miami International Airport is actually the number one employer in the county.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Huge. Yeah, they call it Airport City, right? Because it's got everything, you know. Restaurants and terminals and all that, and it's getting pretty busy. I was at Miami International last Saturday, and it was moving along. Definitely a big turn from where we were, you know, 9 months ago, something like that.
Yeah,
absolutely. So as we kind of come to the end of our hour, any advice for aspiring aviators? You know, you said about not being so tough on yourself, but somebody that's trying to get into it, I mean, like where do you recommend somebody start?
If you can, I don't know what the options are right now over there, but if any at all possible, if you could just probably do an introductory flight. So like what you were saying, you guys do that as well too. So I think it's a good opportunity for those who are watching or those who know someone who wants to be a pilot. They could go ahead and share this with them and let them know that, you know, check out Wayman. Do the introductory flight. Have a look and see if it's something that you want to do. If it's something interesting and if you feel like, yeah, this could be for me, go ahead and pursue it. It's a lovely journey to get to where, you know, even if you just want to get a private pilot license, or even if your ultimate goal at some point is to become an airline pilot and flying on an A320 or 737, it is a wonderful journey to get there. So don't let anybody tell you that it can't be done, or don't let anyone talk down to you and tell you that maybe you're not too intelligent, or you're a female, or you can't do it, or you come from a poor family and you can't make it. Just go ahead. Just ignore that. Go straight after your goals. You will find a way to get it done. Trust me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And something I like to add on to that is, even as a pilot, it's such a special career, special job, that even your worst days have these amazing moments. You know, like I'm sure those days when you were doing 13 legs hopping around the islands, you know, at the end of it, you're like, you know, that was flight time. Right.
Exactly. Or like on that last leg, you're tired and it's like, it's the most amazing sunset.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
They got things above like the clouds. So, and to be far on top, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Well, so to everyone out there, please visit @flaps40_ Instagram. Yeah. Make sure to follow Gizzy and follow us at Wayman Aviation. This will be available, of course, right away on Facebook for anyone that was watching us live, and on YouTube very soon. Also, youtube.com/Wayman Aviation. Thank you so much, Gisela, for joining us. Great conversation. You have a great
No problem. Evening.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
This series is brought to you by Wayman Aviation Academy. Learn to fly with a safe, reliable, professional academy located between Miami and Fort Lauderdale in sunny South Florida, USA. Enjoy the training and cosmopolitan life with Wayman's 42 aircraft, 6 airline partners, and 2 bases to help you be the captain.